listening to Radio Free Cybertron. Today is January 6th, 2010. 2010. I am so old. I am Brian Kilby. With me, I have, John DeLuna, JD Church, and XV. Hey, guys, tell us who you are. What is this Radio Free Cybertron thing about?
It's about Transformers and stuff. Transformers and all that that implies.
Yeah, yeah. We're kind of the voice of trans-fandom, really. And if you mean, like, trans-fandom in the general sense and not, you know, trans-fandom being the old website.
Which, and so apparently there were the podcasts in which we date ourselves.
Yeah, we're kind of like the old farts podcast. But now, you know, we're kind of young and hip again.
Right.
So we're kind of going through our mid-geek crisis.
Yeah.
Our mid-geek life haircut.
Well, Brian is going through his mid-geek crisis. We're just kind of along for the ride.
Yeah, basically. It's like, hey, I kind of want to be relevant, so I want to do a podcast.
Relevant? Yeah, you gave up on it.
Actually, yeah, podcasting is kind of passe at this point.
Yeah, because that's pretty much 2003 right there.
Yeah. So we talk about Transformers and stuff. That's why we're the official podcast of TFormers.com. You know, we don't talk about Parcheesi or marbles. Which I guess we could actually do a podcast about Parcheesi and marbles.
Well, it's not that we don't talk about those. It's just we don't focus on those.
That's true. That's very true.
Often that discussion goes on between the scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We are kind of awesome, though. I mean, just ignore this.
Kind of?
Yeah, just ignore this beginning spiel. Because this is kind of awkward for us because we expect that you know who we are. But we probably have quite a few new listeners this week. Because, again, we are now the official podcast at TFormers.com. We would like to thank Jack and everyone at TFormers.com for having us, yes.
So, yes, for hosting us, being gracious hosts.
Being gracious hosts, so thank you guys. So, like I said, we talk about the news and stuff, and we're going to start off with the news. Also on the show, we have a couple more people. We have Rob Springer, who is dealing with an issue of crap right now. He has a sewer problem.
Literally.
And yeah, Turin yes. is on the show as well. He often does the news. Sometimes he's actually on the show, and he also writes our Transformers the Movie parody, which we are.
You're
known
probably
for.
Familiar with it. It's been around for nearly 10 years now.
Oh God, we're so old.
And we still haven't finished it yet.
We haven't finished it yet. We did just finish part four. So part four.
If I do say so myself, it's the best one yet.
Yeah, it's up there. It is really good, I do have to say. You can check that out at tfradio.net. Our website is tfradio.net. If you're a long-time listener, just skip ahead a couple minutes because, you know. So we are available also on Facebook. We have a Facebook fan page. Go there, friend us, because, again, there's lots of cool stuff there. We're also on Twitter at tfradio. So I feel bad.
Sounds like he's losing interest.
Yeah.
Somebody pump it back up.
Maybe I don't want to do this podcast anymore. I'm kind of tired of it already.
I'm not taking over. I got my own podcast to deal with.
Yeah, actually, we also have a couple more shows. We have a new show called Superhero Time, which is based around Mighty Morphin Power Rangers in hentai.
Sentai.
Hentai.
So,
hentai is different.
You need a hentai show.
I will neither confirm nor deny that I have adequate knowledge to do a hentai podcast.
So that's a new show that started today. We also have a new Soundwave, which the next episode of New Soundwave should be probably a day after you hear this one, as well as one that is hardly updated, but it's called RFC Throwback, which is basically a chance for me to just do a stupid podcast. By myself, like I did it 10 years ago when I was a lonely, lonely 21-year-old boy.
Now you're just a lonely, lonely 30-year-old boy.
True. What did Rob say that Crazy Steve said that it's hard being a 35-year-old with a 10-year-old hobby?
Mm.
So.
Something along those lines.
It's true.
Funny and true, yes. Very
yes.
true.
Okay, so now that we've wasted 5 minutes of our time and 5 minutes of the listener's time, let's go ahead and get into the news.
Woohoo!
Okay, what is this, XV? Target DCPI numbers. So there's new numbers in the target
system.
Oh,
wow. There's an acronym I haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, I haven't worked retail in forever, so.
I worked at Target, so.
I don't know what DCPI stands for.
I don't know. I can't. What is,
yeah, nor I.
What is, hang on just a second. What is, do you remember what it stands for?
Department Glass.
That's JD's wife. He's married. Yeah.
We used to work at Target, so give us a moment. Basically, the long and short of it is it's an internal identification number. So,
okay.
Yeah, third three are the item. Yeah. So basically, it's an internal number that Target uses to categorize its products. So you can tell what department an item goes in based on the first basically five numbers. So that 087 is
sporting goods,
toys.
Oh, or toys. Okay, so Transformers Cyber Ops Bumblebee, Transformers Movie 2 Battle Pack, 5-Pack Combiner, Deluxe Movie Collection, Deluxe Collection 2, Combiner 2-Pack, Movie 2 Legends 2-Pack, and Animation Laptop. I have an idea what the Animation Laptop is.
5-Pack Combiner?
I have an idea that I don't want it, so...
Ha ha.
Well, don't we already have a Transformers laptop toy?
Yeah, I was playing with it a couple of days ago, and I felt so stupid. Just so utterly stupid playing. So, why am I doing this? I mean, a six-year-old me would have, like, wanted that thing so badly, but...
Of course, it's also worth noting that the average six-year-old has access to a real laptop these days.
Yeah, that is so true.
Fair enough.
You know, kids now, they have a CNC, like, in Flash... So there's really no reason to have any of that crap anymore.
What are the combiners?
It's
which one?
Combiners 2-pack?
5-pack or the 2-pack?
Well, both. What's the 5-pack combiner? It's going to be $20.
That's a good question. Yeah, aren't the Bruticus and all them twice that?
I think so. I thought they were like...
Ethereum were $30 each. It's been speculated that the 5-pack combiner... might be the Hasbro Legends Devastator, just with a screwed up data entry.
Yeah, this is also subject to the data entry of some minimum wage person somewhere.
Actually, well, I don't know. Okay,
It's possible.
Target's usually pretty good, but
it's possible it could also be like a Constructicon Maximus recolor, just at a lower price.
Now that would make
cheaper
sense.
Plastic.
Well, that would make sense since they've re-released the other two.
Right, yeah. I mean, it could go either way, but...
I was at a comic shop in Hickory, North Carolina, and they were charging $100 for that thing.
For
what?
Yeah.
No way!
Yeah. I laughed and laughed and laughed. This is the same place that...
That's what it goes for, though.
Yeah, well, I
think that's what it goes for.
They charge like $200 for loose G1 toys.
And combiners too bad. Okay, well... Yeah, because the only thing that is sort of missing would be that Legends combiner set, but I don't know.
Is that five pieces or is that six pieces?
It's seven. The Legends Devastator.
Seven. But, you know, I was going to say on the keypad, the seven's right next to the five, but it's really not.
I guess, in the sense that there's like nine... numbers all together.
I've been wearing a hand brace for the last 3 days, and I have messed up so many things. So, you know, it's all up for conjecture. Sure, why not?
Okay.
What happened to you? Are you just going to gloss over that?
Yeah. There came a big ice storm or whatever, and a limb fell from the tree in the front yard, and trying to get the tree, or get the limb, you know, loose from the tree,
Kim came running out of the house and beat him with the limb off the tree.
Yeah,
just really, on the hand.
Yeah, yeah. I sort of ripped it out and flipped over a couple times. It was very funny and painful. So, okay, the leader Bumblebee. Yay. Yeah.
Who cares?
You know, I have yet to pick up Revenge of the Fallen Bumblebee.
In any form?
In any form. I'm pretty satisfied with the... Prototype Camaro Bumblebee from the 2007 movie. I really don't need another Bumblebee, but you know, if I wanted one, I mean, I guess the leader Bumblebee is as good as any. I'm certainly not going to get the Supreme Bumblebee or whatever he's called for the current going
Ultimate
retail price.
Bumblebee.
Ultimate Bumblebee.
Gosh,
I passed it up on clearance. Yeah.
The consensus has been that the best Bumblebee toy available is the Human Alliance one. Which,
yeah,
if you're
going
to get Revenge of the Fallen Bumblebee, that seems like the one to get.
Yeah. Unless, the later one's supposed to have, it's supposed to have the actual, like, hand, too, that converts to the blaster, I guess, and the face shield, but I don't know.
Oh, well.
I mean, it, at the leader price, I don't see it happening.
Yeah. The interesting bit of news though this week are the Universe Special Edition Deluxes, the exclusives to Hasbro Toy Shop,
which are actually like Australian and Asian market exclusives.
Yeah, those are at Marshalls. So if you want to get a Grimlock, not Grimlock, Overkill or a Megatron, ooh, you know,
or a drag strip.
Drag strip, I would consider because I love that mold. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do like that mold.
The Grimlock mold, kind of, it's okay, but as Overkill, it's pretty awesome. Not really. Yeah, just
too bad it wasn't Trypticon.
Yeah. That would have been.
Yeah.
Or
we'll
Beast Wars Dinobot
later.
Yeah.
Beast Wars Dinobot would have been fun symmetry.
Yeah. Because, you know, Beast Wars Grimlock was, or Dinobot was Dinobot, and Grimlock was Grimlock. Or,
but they did the Grimlock or the Dinobot mold
for the universe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you tell that there's like not a lot of news going on? But we don't need news on this show.
No.
Well, awesome. There's more news than there was last week.
I don't
this is true.
Was there news last week?
No.
There was more than
Ghost Starscream.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of which, the Claragos version of everyone's favorite Seeker Starscream is on the way at Big Bad Toy Store for $124.99. The translucent version of Starscream is likely to be on one of the hottest toys of the year, and they expect it to arrive in June. They also have a G1 Sunstorm bust. They don't have any pictures yet, but they know that he's going to be yellow-orange, detailed with red and white, and possessing more power than almost any other Transformer in bust form.
Will the bust be radioactive?
I hope so. I would pay an extra $20
for
that.
Well, you have to set it separately from your other busts so that it doesn't melt them.
Yeah. That would be kind of cool. He's limited to 600 pieces, and he's going to be $49.99. So that's $10 off the MSRP, because Big Bad Toy Store, they care about the fans and saving you guys money. They also got in the Revenge of the Fallen Devastator combiner set, the Hasbro version. It's $119. And the Marvel Crossover Series 5 case and singles, they've also been released. And you can find all that and more at BigBadToyStore.com. We'd like to thank Big Bad Toy Store for sponsoring Radio Free Cybertron, and we want to encourage everyone to go give them a visit. Go to tfradio.net and click on the link, if you can't find it yourself, obviously. So, JD, this day in history.
Yes. So, January 4th, there's two items. We'll do one first. UK Marvel Series ends with issue 332, and on January 5th, very special episode of Beast Wars Metals premiered in 2000. Where is the banana?
I completely forgot that Beast Convoy had a preoccupation with bananas.
Yes.
That completely skipped my mind. So,
But barring all that, there was a very special day, January 4th, 2005.
It's a black day in Transformers history, you could say, yes. Or a very bright day.
Yes, it was darkest before the dawn, as Dreamwave came to a fiery, smoldering end, and Pat Lee's dream died. Yes. So, yep, Dreamwave.
So you could say Pat Lee had to wave bye to his dream.
Oh, God.
Is disproportioned nightmare.
You know, it's interesting that it both on January 4th in two different years, two comic series came to an end.
That is ironic. 1992 and 2005.
But, you know, unlike Simon Furman, who still has a viable career and is loved by Transformers fans, Pat Lee is reviled, and he's forced to live in Hong Kong, where no one knows who he is.
Yes. Yeah, I think Bob Skeer kind of cheered, because then Pat Lee became more hated than him.
It was a bum rap with Skeer. So.
It was. I admit that.
Definitely not a bum rap with Pat Lee. Pat Lee is
totally deserved. He's a douchebag.
What was the initial reaction when he started. When
There are people who still love Dreamwave.
Yeah, I remember it was like the second coming.
Yeah. I remember reading the first issue of whatever that terrible G1 comic was and just scratching my head. And I had the look of dull surprise. Yeah.
It's like the scene from Christmas Story when the kid gets the decoder ring, you know, and he's waiting for the decoder ring and he gets so excited. He gets it in the mail and he goes over to the bathroom and he decodes the thing and it's an advertisement.
Drink Ovaltine.
Drink more Ovaltine. I felt like that. I was like so excited, been hyped for months. I'm like, this is it. This is the second coming. This is going to be awesome. And I got the comic and I took it home and I read it and I was like, what the hell?
I worked with a guy who we kept talking. He loves Transformers, and there's no doubt that he loves Transformers, but he also loves Dreamwave comics, and we would argue over that so much, and I just had to quit because you just can't get with some people.
That was your reason?
Yeah.
For quitting?
Well, not the job. That's not the reason I quit. Okay. The job.
That would have been okay. You know what? For you and this job.
Yeah, that would be kind of great. you know, we're doing the podcast and talking about Dreamwave, and it's just sort of zapping my energy. So maybe we can't do this anymore. Maybe I just want to quit. No! I want to keep doing this podcast. I love this podcast. I love Transformers. And we will be doing this every week, whether you listen or not. Please listen.
In the middle of the show, I want you to just randomly Hulk up to kind of get yourself psyched up.
Putting my hand up to my ear, you know, listening to all the Kilby maniacs out there screaming and yelling my name.
Yeah, but you do it for like 20 minutes like he does now.
Yeah, God.
Just savor it way too long.
Well, he's going to die soon, so it's not like, you know.
I don't know. The evil ones never die.
That's true. That's true. I'm trying to figure out how much of this crap I'm editing out and how much I'm leaving in.
Well, now, you know, you shouldn't take too much out because our new audience should get a genuine sense of what we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And every now and then they'll get a random tangent on Hulk Hogan, and then we'll steer back onto the road and give them some more Transformers goodness.
Hey, speaking of Transformers goodness, let's go to Stump Monzo for this week. Fort Max wants to know. Name an episode of Beast Wars which featured or actually had Cheetor's tail gun.
Let's see. I'm going to guess it was an episode with both him and Tigatron in it so that they would be able to differentiate between the two of them. Fallen Comrades?
Correct. XV being the little researcher that he is, he found all four episodes.
I'm a go-getter.
The episodes were Fallen Comrades, The Probe, Possession, and Law of the Jungle. Yet again, someone has failed to stump Monzo. If you think he can stump Monzo, send a question to stumpmonzo@tfradio.net. Just to let you know that there actually has to be an answer. We don't want to know. Don't ask him what his opinion is or what he thinks something should be. We have to have like an actual question. The question
don't being, ask him who would win in a fight between the Fallen and Super Saiyan 4 Goku.
That's obvious. It's Super Saiyan 4 Goku.
That's what I was going to say. Despite the fact that would be Super Saiyan 4 Goku, that's not really a legitimate question.
We don't talk about Dragon Ball Z. This is not a Dragon Ball Z podcast. That's just an aside. Just a random aside that we have in this show. We do them all the time. So
they're fun.
Yeah, they're fun. Yeah, Rob Springer, who is normally on the show, he is not on the show. He's actually, his microphone doesn't work, so he's listening along and commenting. His comment was that DBZ is gay. That's
disgust.
Not really. Yeah, that's not really funny, Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's polarizing our audience already.
Yeah,
the correct term is homosexual.
Yeah.
Rob Springer says, yes, it is funny.
No, Rob, it really isn't.
Okay, well.
It is a Quinn full of crap. Rob, I don't understand what that means.
Rob is our resident yuck monkey, and so he'll be on next week.
Yeah, when Rob's computer is working, he'll be on next week. But as is, he's in the, what is it, the...
Crapper?
Yeah, the crapper. I'm enjoying some delicious Pepsi Max, sorry. Okay, so if you have a question that is verifiable with an actual answer, send it to StumpMonzo at tfradio.net. We bet Monzo knows the answer. So, what do we have on the show? What else? I'm looking at our show notes because I'm lazy.
It's time for Toy Talk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so who bought Skyfall?
That would be me.
And you're actually kind of surprised by this toy, aren't you?
Well, no more than when I bought it as Darkwind.
But why did you buy it again? It's the same mold, and it's not a very good mold.
Well, see, I've got this unnatural love for Transformers Generation 2. And Skyfall is based on one of my favorite toys from Transformers Generation 2, the Cyberjet Skyjack.
I love the Cyberjets. Hooligan's my favorite, though.
I said one of my favorites.
Ah, got you.
Basically, I love all the Cyberjets just about equally. But yeah, Hooligan's a lot better. I've got like two other versions.
Wasn't Acid Storm a Cyberjet?
No.
What was the green? What was the green and blue one?
Jetfire.
Jetfire was one. Was it Jet?
There was Jetfire, Strafe, and
Strafe
the
was
other
white. Strafe was white and red. I guess it was Jetfire, the green and blue one. Never mind. I just assumed that that was
Air Raid. That was the other one.
Air Raid. Okay, sorry. But yeah, you have an unnatural love for animals in G2. So,
and okay, never mind. You know what I was gonna say.
Yeah. So. So the point is that you bought this toy because it was a recolor that interested you, not because the mold itself was that interesting.
But because of what it was recolored to be.
So we've had to buy toys that we wanted just because of, you know, the fact that it's a recolor. I've done it. I've done it twice in the past month.
Yeah. What's really interesting, I guess, with XV, I found was that you bought recolors, but not the original mold as it was intended.
In fact, I flat out refused to buy the Silver Bolt version.
He's so boring.
I bought Storm Cloud instead of Power Glide. Either Power Glide.
Chew on that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think that through.
No, it's interesting. Well, anyway, it's just interesting that, like,
he bought Stormcloud because it was on clearance. It had to be it.
Yeah, when did you buy Stormcloud?
Yeah, when did you get Stormcloud? I mean, why would you want that over either color?
We need a timeline.
Because I didn't want Power Glide to be the same height as Onslaught.
But it's a...
Wow.
I want the bolts, that's as someone else.
But you did buy Onslaught. You didn't wait for Hardhead.
No, I did buy Onslaught.
Did you get Hardhead?
Not yet.
You going to?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Are they still on sale?
$15.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But Onslaught's now back to like 20 or 30 or whatever.
11.
No, mine's gone back up.
Well, mine's still on sale.
Who wins?
Well, all right then.
Yeah. What a strange fight we're witnessing. I'm still waiting for the Toys R Us exclusives to go on sale. I can't justify full price for either one of them.
Yeah, if Countdown went on sale, I'd finally buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I of course paid full price for Darkwing. Yeah, Darkwing. They called it Darkwing.
Yeah.
It was originally Darkwing. Duck. And again, that's a situation where I got it for the character it was. I don't have any particular affection for that character, but it's not common to get recolors made to be toys from the late 80s, unless they're MicroMasters.
Mm. Oddly.
They love to make MicroMaster updates.
Oh, they absolutely do.
Yeah, who would have guessed that? So are there any other like recolors out there that, I don't know if like it's a... as extreme as XV's case, where, like, you know, it overrided this dislike for the mold. But are there any recolors out there where, like, the recolor is, like, clearly superior to the original? I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I'm surprised. I agree completely that that's the case with classic Silverbolt. I can't believe that, looking back, though, since Classic's molds are so blatantly the original characters. But for some reason, it works with him. It worked twice with him.
Yeah, I mean, I'd really prefer a different head for Skyfall, because the Cyberjets had the distinctive visor faces. But even so, it does still work.
Would you go as far as to say that Energon Megatron, it was kind of obvious that they're going to repaint him as Galvatron, though. But I'm not too crazy about the mold. But
I'm not too crazy about the Galvatron recolors it got.
Yeah, he's kind of gaudy.
He is kind of gaudy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Hasbro and Takara ones are both, they're just wrong in different ways. Neither one really looked Galvatron colored to me.
But you're right, that's a good get. I mean, that's a good example, because, I mean, clearly, that one's like, I guess that's a unique case. I doubt that's ever happened before or will ever happen again, where the original, or it's like backwards, where, you know, the first release of a mold is clearly not the color scheme it's intended to have. I mean, I can't imagine that's going to happen again, or it happened before that.
That's just so odd that they did that, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, they really weren't selling to the G1 fans at that point. They hadn't gone to that. I mean, obviously they had people there who were fans, but it wasn't like they were blatantly selling to the classic fans as they are now.
They were, but they weren't. I mean, you're right. They weren't actively doing it, but clearly with the design of the entire line, it was kind of like, I guess, an added bonus or something they didn't have to speak to, because people our age would look at the mold or look at the toy and just know. Yeah. So they don't have to spend time saying it. They're just, you know, doing it through the design work.
Well, okay. So, but sort of back to the topic, just an interesting observation. One thing that I'm prone to do, and I think we have on this show before, is talk about the, you know, and sort of rag on Hasbro, like, oh, all these recolors, you know, okay, here's another color of this mold. But is what we're really saying in this discussion that there's a subtle genius to that? That by actually doing these recolors, they're getting to recycle a mold. And in some instances, they're sort of hitting pay dirt and actually making more money off of it.
Yeah, I think it's genius. I was explaining Transformers. Actually, I was explaining recolors to somebody who knew nothing, really next to nothing about Transformers. And the concept of recolors was just really weird to them. Like they had a hard time accepting, like, so you take one toy and you color it different and you give it a new name and it's a different character and you buy that. You know, they didn't really, like, get it because they hadn't been, like, trained to accept it like we are. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a genius concept from a business standpoint. And, you know, I mean, from a creative standpoint, at this point we accept it and we can kind of come to terms with it. So, I mean, I think it's fine for us. But, yeah, on the surface, it's genius. And to an outsider, it probably doesn't make a lot of sense. It's probably really weird that we just kind of go along with it and buy it.
But yeah, that's actually a really good point. There's not a lot of other lines that do it exactly the way Transformers does. A lot of times you'll just get identical stuff with different accessories, like armor for Power Rangers or clothes for, say, Barbie or G.I. Joe. The big G.I.
Right.
Joes. You know, it's strange to just outright change the colors and nothing else about it.
Right, and pawn it off as something, as somebody completely different.
Right.
And your audience just kind of goes with it.
Yeah, there are instances that I completely skipped over a toy, though, that I just picked up. I just picked up Music Label New Soundwave, a.k.a. Sound Blaster. I really didn't want the original color. Nothing's wrong with it. It's just I didn't want to pay that much money for Soundwave. But I couldn't say no to New Soundwave because...
And then, of course, there was animated New Soundwave, too.
And I regret buying the original Soundwave because he is a loathsome toy. And I mean, I was stupid for buying a second one because I know it's such a bad toy. But the color of Electrostatic Soundwave is again an homage to Sound Blaster, and he comes with a frickin' keytar that turns into Rat Bat. So, I couldn't say no. I was compelled to buy that toy.
And see, that's another thing, too. Hasbro is kind of changing the way they're playing the game with the recolors. A lot of times now, they've said they're building in ways to add new physical parts to the toy, so it's not just a straight recolor anymore.
I mean...
And that's appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't have to.
There are toys that I would buy any repaint of. I mean, like Rotor Storm or Overload or toys like that. But the fact that they made me buy a repaint of a toy that I hated is is really, you know, bravo Hasbro. I mean, you screwed me over.
Shame on you.
Yeah, so.
Excellent.
Yeah, so, I mean, I wish they would recolor some more Robot Heroes. I could totally take some of those, but sadly, they're all gone.
Bye-bye.
You know what, a final note on this. It's really interesting when you think about it, too, what they did with the Seekers, Sky Raiders, whatever you want to call them, because we know, you know, whenever a line starts and we see a Starscream or whoever comes out first, it's usually Starscream.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get a billion more, and there's a good chunk of us that eagerly anticipate that. Like,
oh, yeah.
Look forward to, like, yeah, the army of recolors of this specific mold. So we know, I mean, we know it's coming and we scoop it up. So especially, like, there's like a line within a line. Like every year we expect this like army of repaints of this specific mold, the airplane mold. And, you know, I mean, nobody thinks it's weird at this point, but it kind of is if you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, some people don't look on it so fondly, though, because, I mean, they can look ahead and foresee a big chunk of this toy line, which we, of course, know isn't going to be limited in length. It's already gone to a number of recolors of one toy.
I do always look forward to Skywarp, though, because I just love Skywarp's colors.
Oh, I love Skywarp.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for Skywarp.
Okay, so to wrap this up, what recolors stand out in your mind as being a whole lot more memorable or just generally superior to the original toy?
Try Predacus Agent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, any of the Black Cheetors. Yep.
And only because of Ravage Three Bodies Evolution, which we have to mention on our first.
We couldn't get away with that.
There are a lot of conventions that we have in the podcast. A lot of it's mentioning like in jokes that we assume that everyone knows. In Ravage Three Bodies Evolution, Ravage Three Bodies Evolution is our favorite piece of fan fiction ever. We will link to it in the show notes.
For me, the recolor that stands out much more than its original is Cybertron Cannonball.
Yeah.
Interesting. For me, it's Scourge. Robots in Disguise Scourge. Just because he's very significant on a lot of levels, and I could really care less about Laser Prime's original color scheme.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I know what it is.
It ends up without any real physical changes being really differentiated from the original toy. That's a pretty impressive thing to do just with a color scheme.
Yeah.
What do you guys think, though, about Big Daddy? I mean, I love Big Daddy. Big Daddy is one of the toys that a small subsection of the fandom, a.k.a. Ouija, they were clamoring for 7-8 years.
Probably longer than that.
Yeah, and he's a good recolor. He's a very good homage to the original Big Daddy. I mean, if you compare the two, I mean, it's obvious, you know, that, you know, Big Daddy is an homage to the original toy. It was a great mold, but the original color scheme, even though the original color scheme was sort of, I don't know,
it was thematically appropriate
for a 50s, I guess, actually.
Supposed to be more 70s, though.
Yeah, but
late 60s.
Yeah, the car itself was more of like, you look at it and it's more of like a 50s type car, but the color scheme was more of a 70s, late 60s, 70s. When they did a lot of the olive green stuff, but it's thematically appropriate. But the mold, the color scheme rather on Big Daddy is just so much better. And I mean, I guess it was a fantastic mold, but the color scheme.
That whole assortment of recolors that Big Daddy was part of was really executed well.
What else was in that?
There was Fracture.
Yeah.
And Breakaway, aka Getaway.
And we're getting another Getaway repaint or another Getaway homage coming up.
And there was Jolt.
Yeah. I forgot what it was, but I saw a picture of it today.
Mm.
But I think he's the creme de la creme. I remember.
I know Big Daddy stands out just because of the association that's built up around him over the years. But they were all really nicely done recolors.
Big Daddy's the only one that I picked up, and I picked up 4 of him.
God.
Why?
He's Big Daddy.
Obsessive.
That's a peek into the mind of Brian.
Yeah, yeah. I will buy multiples of toys that I really like if I really, really like them.
Now, do you open them, or do you just kind of like tuck them away and sleep soundly?
Honestly, 2 of them became trade fodder, and the other 2 were still mint on sealed card on my wall.
So you had 4 of them, and you haven't even played with 1.
Nope.
You fail as a fan, sir.
No kidding.
On many levels.
I can't hardly not open a figure. I'm still like itching to open my Devastator set.
Do you how many like mint on sealed card or mint on sealed box toys do you have?
Me? Yeah. I sold all mine.
Oh yeah, there's 1 of them here on my wall. Hey,
yes, you now have 1 of them. No, I pretty much sold all my carded stuff. Maybe 3 if I have anything still sealed. Maybe 3.
I had virtually all of the Transmetals toys, all of the Fusors, and most of like the season 2 and 3 Beast Wars toys on my wall. Then one boring summer day, I opened them all. So I'm pretty good.
Did you regret that, or was that a good day?
A good day. I'm pretty good at keeping stuff mint on sealed card. If I don't really want to play with the toy, like Electrostatic Soundwave, he's a crappy toy. So I'm happy having him on my wall. But
you mentioned Tripriticus Agent earlier.
He's on my wall.
That's not really the point I was getting to, but
but thanks.
If there's a toy that you know is pretty terrible, but it comes out in a really pretty color scheme, how inclined would you be to buy it?
Depends on there are a lot of pretty toys that I don't buy. I mean, I can appreciate them, but I don't have to own them.
Maybe I should ask someone who's a better fan than you.
Well, we know you're inclined to buy them. You bought it. You bought Skyfall and what's
I bought a Tripriticus Agent too.
Ah,
I bought Tripriticus Agent like a few times over, but he was trade fodder. But
but you bought Tripriticus Agent because of Ravage 3 Bodies Evolution.
Yes,
I bought it before that came out. Before the hype was built up around it.
I tried to make one before it came out. But...
You probably weren't alone.
No, I probably wasn't. I went all the way, though. I actually bought an additional Scarum figure so I could switch out the Spark Crystals. Yes.
Ooh, look at that.
Yes. Anyway, recolors, despite the fact we complain about them, apparently they're a great idea.
When they're done well, they're a really good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, I'm getting bored. I'm gonna go to another segment. Actually, you know what? We interviewed frickin' Stan Bush. Let's play that.
We should play that.
Stan Bush is awesome. Let's go.
He's got the touch.
Yeah, Stan Bush has the touch, and he's going to give it to us.
He's got the power too. Don't forget that.
We are speaking with Stan Bush, Mr. Bush. Thank you for speaking with us this week.
Oh, hey, great to be here. How you guys doing?
It's snowing here, so it's kind of weird, but I'm warm inside and I get to speak with you, so it's pretty cool.
Oh, all right.
So, Taryn, you have the first question.
Okay, so the touch is, in a word, epic. There's a very short list of songs that make me want to literally stand up and shout, that make me feel like I could if I exercise just a bit more, run out into the night and be a masked vigilante, beating up bad guys and doing unlikely acrobatic stunts. That's how it makes me feel. So my question is, are there any songs that make you feel that way?
Oh, boy, that's a tough question. I don't know. Let's see. I there's a lot of cool songs that have been around over the years, you know, that make me feel, you know, inspired and everything. And I don't know about running outside, but I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't really come up with something out of hand here. Let's see. Maybe Eye of the Tiger, you know, that's a great song. And, you know, certainly I always love bands like Boston and Foreigner. That stuff gets me charged up.
Dude, me too. I love Boston.
Yeah.
Who doesn't? Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of songs, a lot of your songs, Stan, get us going. And, you know, I had a question about kind of stepping back and looking at your work as a whole. And I was wondering, you know, when you were starting to write music, when you were starting to get into music, what were kind of your influences growing up and kind of, you know, learning the business and learning what sounds you liked? You know, who did you look to as inspiration?
Well, I grew up during a really great era, you know, the late 60s, early 70s and into the 80s. I mean, I always loved, you know, bands like the Beatles, but also, you know, Led Zeppelin and all that. But earlier, like Motown has always been great. The songs are amazing and the vocal performances and all that are great. It's really, it kind of comes down to the song, I think, more than anything. Whatever genre it is, you know, the song is the whole deal, you know, for me.
What parts of the on that note, what kind of, you know, when a song speaks to you, you know when you hear a song, whether it be, you know, something you've written or somebody else has written, you know, what about those songs like catches you, like to you, what makes a good song?
Which song is that?
Well, just in general, I was asking, you know, what, you know, you say a song more than anything kind of influences you, you know, certain songs. So what about songs makes a good song to you? Like, you know, what touches you? What gets to you?
Yeah, it's kind of a feeling, you know. It's just sometimes it takes you back to being a kid or you know, that feeling of, like, young love and whatever. Just makes you feel like, you know, like you're really living, you know, really living your life. And so I think nostalgia is a big thing, you know, for a lot of people, you know, because we all kind of grew up in, you know, those awkward teenage years. But it's cool stuff. So music is so wonderful because it, you know, it reaches you on so many levels.
I did have a theory about one of the reasons that the touch spoke to me so directly, and that's simply because it's actually written in the second person. It's not a song about, you know, the singer. It's speaking to the listener. And another song that's sort of that way would be You're the Best by Jobin Esposito. Yeah. Or then sort of a second person plural song, Princes of the Universe by Queen. You know, it's something that involves the listener. Was that something you had in mind when you wrote it?
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, it was inspired from that. I don't know if you remember, if you ever saw that Iron Eagle 2 with Louis Gossett Jr.
Oh, yeah.
There's like a young pilot, and he turns to him and says, "Kid, you got the touch." And it was like, wow, you know, a light went on. But I really like that, the way, you know, when you're talking to somebody like that, it has a lot more impact. It's the other thing too, of like believing in yourself is so important. You know, like a lot of us, most of us, just kind of cruise through life and use only a small fraction of our capacity, you know, and capability. I think we could do extraordinary things if we, you know, just kind of go for it. And you know what I mean? It's you see that all the time, where, you know, people excel and do great things. But it's really about believing in yourself mostly. And I love that kind of stuff. It, you know, it may be a little corny, but hey, you know, it's important, I think, to give that message. You know, there's so much negativity in the world, you know, and it's cool to say something like that inspires people.
Now, obviously, that's the song you're best known for, is The Touch. How do you still feel about it after all these years? Do you still like it, like performing
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's a cool song. I mean, it's okay. It's a silly song in a way, but, you know, because it's just so over the top. But there's just something about it that still, after all this time, still grabs me, you know. It's Dare's a great song, too. You know, it's they both have something about them that's it's hard to put your finger on. Okay, maybe it's not as sophisticated as some other songs that I've written, you know, but it definitely, it's the one I'm kind of known for, and, you know, I'm happy about that.
You're happy with that? It's not, do you ever feel sometimes that it gets more attention than you would like because some of the other things you've done get a little overshadowed by it, by its success?
Not really. It's so hard to sort of get out there at all. I'm just grateful to have had the notoriety that I have had, you know. So in that respect, no, I don't look at it that way at all. You know, I guess some people might if they spend, you know, their whole life going and playing one song and their show, everybody, when are you going to play that song? That's the only one they care about hearing, you know. But fortunately, a lot of the fans have gotten in through The Touch and Dare and other things. They found out that I have a whole lot of other stuff that they really like. And, you know, I'm just now finishing up my 12th album. So that's going to be released probably spring, early spring, looking at. So it's we're nearly finished. We have we're just working on the last couple of songs now, and it's going great. So
what can you tell us about the new album?
Well, let's see. It's going to come out in Europe on Frontiers, and it'll be out in Japan, and then in North America it'll be out on LA Records, and of course it'll be available on iTunes. Anyway, people can find out, check in at stanbush.com, you know, to find out what's going on. I get a little plug there. I'm really happy. I was worried because the last album was so good, In This Life, had gotten, you know, incredible reviews. One, I guess it was melodicrock.com said it was, they gave it 97%, and this other, what's the one in Sweden, they said the album of the year, which was really amazing. So I was really pleased with that. So, you know, it was one of these things where I was kind of nervous because how do you top that? You know, it's like, but it's just one of those things where you just don't get in a hurry and just keep trying to do your best work and push yourself. But it's taken me a year, you know, to write all the songs.
See, I think that's really cool. There's a lot of artists that they do their best work on their first couple of albums. But
that's absolutely true.
At this point in your career, you're doing your best work. I think that's great.
Well, thank you. It's really true, though. You're right. You hit it on the head there because a band, you know, they'll write for 5 or 10 years and get this body of work, and then they put out a great first album, and then they've got to write the second album. They have to write it in 2 months or something, you know, and it's invariably it's way weaker, you know. But after a while, I think you kind of build up this sort of skill of coming up with stuff, and I don't know, like some of the people who've been around a while, you know, like Elton John, and I'm not comparing myself to him, obviously, because he's amazing. But you know what I'm saying, the guys that have just done it for a long time and they just really know how to craft a song. And that's what, you know, that's what you want to go for, you know, aspire to be like, you know, is somebody that's prolific in that way. And anyway, it's one of those things where, you know, I've done it so long that I'm starting to get good at it. It's mainly, you know, it's mainly it's about recognizing when you do have something good. It's you don't always know how to get there, but when you see it, you know it. You know, it's like Don Henley, for instance. Everybody loves his stuff. He's just a great writer, and it's one of those things. I mean, some songs people hate, some songs people like, but nearly everybody likes his stuff, and Elton John, and you know, people like that.
You did a video tribute for the U.S. military. How did that come about?
Oh, yeah. Well, let's see. My friend who's a video director, Art Douglas, he's
from a military family. His dad's a retired Air Force guy, and we put our heads together and decided to do this thing as a tribute to the troops, because really the song is perfect for that, you know, to sing to them, you know, that they've got the touch, and because these people are out there laying their lives on the line for us and defending us, and it's just amazing, and it's great to be able to do something positive for them. And actually, they several hundred copies just recently were sent of the DVD, the music video, to Iraq and also to Afghanistan. So it's one of those things where, you know, it's great. We actually shot it. People asked me, said, when did you go to Iraq? but it was actually shot here in Southern California in the desert, you know, and it looks just like you're there. And
yep.
So we intercut it with footage from Iraq and everything, and actual combat footage as well. And so it really does all fit, and it totally works. We did that thing in just a couple of hours. It was a real quick deal, you know?
That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
Stan, you sound like a busy guy. So, you know, take us through, if you can, I say in quotes, your typical day. I'm sure most days aren't very typical, but take us through, like, you know, a typical day in life of Stan Bush, as far as like writing the songs or, you know, like, you know, how do you spend your days? How do you make this happen?
Oh, well, it's not as glamorous as it might sound. I mean, I have a boring life just like everybody else, but no, I know what you're saying. The producer friend of mine is like pretty much my best friend, Holger Pfaff. He's been here for 15 or 20 years, but he's from Germany, and he's an extraordinary guitarist and producer and just a really good friend. And we put the last couple of albums together, you know. We do a lot of the recording at his place, and he does guitars and stuff and keyboards. He plays everything pretty much, and then I'll do the vocals and things there, and then we'll go into a big studio and record, you know, redo the drums and bass with a couple of the top players in L.A., and then we mix in a big room too. So it's we really wind up with pretty much a state-of-the-art album that you would have paid, you know, $100,000 to do, you know, 20 years ago. But since the, you know, innovations in home recording and computer stuff, and, you know, you can really do a lot for a pretty small budget these days.
Yeah. I work in radio, and I know a lot of people in at least the local music business, and virtually everyone records their stuff at home.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a sort of a small home studio here that, you know, I have less than $1,000 in, well, not counting the system itself, but, you know, less than $3,000 in, and I can record some pretty quality stuff. So
yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you can do these days that, you know, that you couldn't do 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm a Pro Tools guy as well. I do sound editing work. That's part of my gig, you know, that I do sound editing for Books on Tape.
Oh, that's I do a lot of audiobook stuff, so that's awesome. What have you edited?
Oh, a lot. I mean, probably somewhere between 500 and 1,000 books. I've been doing it for about 10 years, and I just love it. I mean, just every kind of book imaginable. You know, we have like all the top actors in LA that come in and read these things, and so it's with, you know, Random House Audio, so they're big, you know.
I've probably listened to some of your work then.
You probably
had no idea. That's awesome.
Yeah. The other thing too that's really cool about that is, I just learned so much. You know, I've you know, having read and listened to all of those books, it's just it's been a tremendously, you know, educating thing for me to do, as a, you know, and also my music, I can work around it, you know, schedule wise. So, but anyway, back to the music stuff. It's been a really cool ride. I mean, I've had songs in movies. I made a lot of money singing commercials back in the day. I did like Toyota trucks, Coors Beer, Budweiser, just on and on. I made a good amount of money. And some of the earlier movies, like, you probably know this, but the first two Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, I did three songs in each of those.
Very well. I know that.
Yeah. And let's see. The Boogie Nights, of course, recorded or put, you know, they put the touch in there. It was with Mark Wahlberg singing it, so instead of me, but it was deliberately done that way for the movie. But
how cool
but
was that?
That was a cool. Sorry.
How cool was that?
I know, it was great. You know, one of my dreams would be to be performing somewhere and have him come on stage with me and sing the song together. Wouldn't that be great?
That would be amazing.
Yeah. You know, the movie, it was obviously, it was a spoof. You know, it was a deliberately bad, and it was like kind of a spoof on the 80s. But anyway, but it was cool. It was that's a pretty big movie, actually, to be on there with a song. And so that was a nice credit, nice paycheck. Also, like in 1996, I had the theme for the Olympics. Capture the Dream was featured on NBC with footage of, they had like a montage of footage when the U.S. swim team won all those gold medals. So that was very cool. So and then also that same year, I had a song in the soap opera Guiding Light, and I won an Emmy for that song of the year. That
wow.
was very cool.
I didn't know that.
The longest wow. running soap opera ever.
I know. That's one of those things they can't take away. You know, it's like kind of legitimizes, you know, it's, you know, obviously it's just whatever, you know, it's not any huge career thing, but it has a credibility factor to it that's kind of cool. Let's see, other than that, let's see, there's been other like TV shows and things and films, and I sang on some other people's records too, like Alice Cooper and Jefferson Starship and, you know, on and on. But I think some of the bigger, you know, obviously the Transformers thing, when we found out it was going to go, originally it was on, I was on Scotty Weathers Records, and when the label told us that it was going to be in a cartoon movie about robots, we thought, oh no, what is this? little did we know, you know, that was going to turn into this phenomenon. So that's been a really cool thing. Like, especially since the resurgence of the Transformers phenomenon with the live action movies and everything, it's been a real boost to my career. You know, because people know and love the original music. In fact, The Touch was supposed to be in the first one, but Michael Bay pulled the song for some reason just a couple weeks before the album came out, or the movie came out. I never found out why.
Was that the one you redid with Linkin Park?
Yeah, I think it might have had something to do with the Linkin Park and the fact that all the... they were all Warner Brothers acts on the soundtrack. You know, like, I don't really know. I never really found out what the deal was. But I know Michael Bay had kind of acted as though the animated movie was inferior. You know how he's kind of got an attitude and all that. But, you know, he mainly kind of wanted to distance himself from the original film. That's what the sense I got from it. But whatever. You know, it is what it is, and... also, we did a new version of The Touch, totally different kind of arrangement, a bit like a Linkin Park kind of vibe that you may know about, called Sam's Theme, and that we made a video for that, and that's on
YouTube. that's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, and that one we submitted for the Revenge of the Fallen, the second picture. That one's going to be on the new album as a bonus track.
Awesome.
Oh yeah, I was wondering how often you perform live these days.
Let's see, we do shows like I say my friend Holder, the guitar player, he and I have a sort of a classic rock band that we perform with. We do shows around LA here doing that band, as well as like the original band. We played at the Transformers convention here in LA in May. They had, let's see, the convention itself was in Pasadena, but then the Saturday night, they had like the concert kind of thing at Paramount Studios on the lot, which was really cool. So we performed that, at that as well with, it was us. And then, also Vince DiCola performed. So it was kind of cool to play with him. Vince has always, he's been a friend, you know, for a long time.
Did you know him prior to Transformers the movie, or did you?
Well, no, I met him with that Transformers movie stuff way back. He played on my album, and you know, when we did he was doing the score for the original Transformers movie, and that we met back then.
Cool.
Yeah, but Vince is a nice guy. Well, also the two of us went to Rochester, New York, to a BotCon like in '97, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that was a blast. So,
it might have been 96.
I'm sorry?
It might have been 96. I wasn't there. I just
96, maybe. Yeah, it was. Yeah, 96, 97, right around there. Yeah. So, but yeah, we've kind of kept in touch over the years. And
this is another kind of, I guess, a big overarching question, but clearly, especially in the last, I would say, 5 years, you know, the music industry and mainly really music distribution has changed greatly. And even the way music is treated, you know, you find like Guitar Hero and DJ Hero and games like that where songs are manipulated or kind of opened up for users to really interact with them, with the songs. So I was going to ask you, Stan, you know, what are your thoughts on how the music industry has changed so greatly between when you started and kind of where we are today?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Good observation. It's been really good in the fact that a lot of other people, it's kind of leveled the playing field, you know, to where, you know, most anybody can put stuff out. And you don't have to be signed to a major label and that's all that stuff. But you know, the other side of the coin obviously is, you know, sometimes you get kind of flooded with content, and it's hard to sort of, you know, to stand out in so much content. But anyway, the interesting thing, like I was when they first started doing the downloading thing, and I was kind of in a way just on principle as a songwriter, you know, I was kind of siding with the people who, you know, didn't want Napster and everybody to enable people to steal music basically and not have to pay for somebody's hard work. Like, you know, you spend tens of thousands of dollars recording something and then somebody else can just come along and take it. You know, that's kind of didn't seem fair. Didn't seem right. But the other side of the coin is you can't really put the genie back in the bottle in that respect. And there enough stuff comes from it too, to where, you know, you get out there, your career can get made, you can get known, and you can be more viable as a performer and so forth. But the other side of the coin, obviously, is that, you know, people like myself who aren't sort of the top in terms of, like, you know, American Idolness, you know, or some giant superstar kind of status, that, you know, it enables people to get out there and still be a part of the music business and get their music out. So in that respect, it's been a really good thing.
Yeah, I imagine. Have you yourself kind of had to, I mean, you kind of touched on this, but have you yourself kind of had to adjust, you know, how you do albums or how you go about releasing things? Has it become, you know, I've heard the opinions that it's become, you know, an industry of singles again, that, you know, you have a big single and the concept album has kind of died off, and, you know, people are more concerned with, you know, if you can have a big hit that gets a lot of downloads on iTunes and things like that. So have you been affected by things like that, or have you kind of tweaked the way you do things, or have you kind of stayed largely, you know, kind of grounded in your own technique and methods?
Well, it's been really good for me in terms of, you know, with the internet, with my MySpace page and all that. Like, for instance, the MySpace page, The Touch, has had 188,000 plays. I mean, that's incredible, you know. That's a really big amount of people, you know, when you think about it. And so, yeah, I think the internet has helped me. I have no clue, if you Googled my name, how many numbers there would be, how many, whatever you call it, references. But, yeah, it's just, I think the internet's been a help, you know, bottom line. That it's one of those things where, I guess, you know, if you really work it, you know, you can get yourself out there. You can be like a stylized kind of a of an artist, let's say an 80s guy like me, kind of, you know, even though my new stuff is obviously gotten more sophisticated in the production and songwriting and everything else, it's still kind of 80s rock. It's just really, you know, good stuff, big, powerful stuff kind of thing with vocals and, you know, keyboards and guitars and all that stuff. But it's like, you can be kind of whatever you want and still find your niche and whatever, and get, there's such a big world out there, you know, with the internet. So you could still get out there.
You know, with the internet, you know, distributing music, you don't have to worry so much about what the trends are in radio or what the record producers want to produce. You can find your own market. You can find your own, you know, style, and there are people who will want to listen to it. That's the cool thing.
I know. That's a great thing, really, because it's, you know, in the past, everything was controlled by radio. You know, it's just and there's two big companies, Clear Channel and whatever the other one was. But and you had the payola, and the, you know, only the people with the big bucks could get in and all that kind of stuff. It was very, you know. And the other thing too that I think is really cool is, like, I remember when in the 80s and so forth, and if you were over 30, you know, you were too old, you know, like, you know, and it's like, nobody cares anymore, really. I mean, it's kind of cool. I mean, you still have your Kid acts and all that, you know, your Jonas Brothers and, you know, whatever the latest ones are, Miley Cyrus, you know, and, but it's kind of, I don't know. I think it's song driven, like you said. It's people really can just latch onto a song. Like, I have this one song that's on the last album called Southern Rain, and it's just a really poignant kind of song. It took about my childhood growing up in Florida, and about what it was like, what it feels like to be, you know, in the rain and all that down there. And I just love it. It takes me back to being a kid. And But that's one of my best songs. And that song, you know, has gotten a lot of, it's just like the last song on the album, but, you know, these people have kind of found it and it's latched onto it as their favorite song, that kind of thing. So,
you've been to BotCons and, of course, other fan events before. I was wondering if you could tell us what might have been one of your strangest fan experiences.
Oh, BotCon. Oh, man. Well, one of the coolest, and you mentioned earlier about this, is, you know, you probably know this, but The Touch came out on Guitar Hero this year, just around the time when the Transformers movie came out. I guess it was June or July, whatever. Yeah, they released The Touch on Guitar Hero World Tour, so that's available. And that, when I was at BotCon, Activision had set up a booth, you know, that had the Guitar Hero set up, and so I was playing Guitar Hero with my fans at the convention. It was really cool. So it wasn't necessarily a funny experience, but that
no,
was
no, that cool. Is pretty cool.
That is awesome. That
was,
yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome playing my song with. Badly.
Yeah, you're better on guitar than on Guitar Hero, I would imagine.
Yeah,
two different things.
Yep.
There is one last question I wanted to ask you.
Okay.
Do you actually deflect laser bolts with your guitar?
Do I deflect what?
Laser bolts with your guitar.
Deflect laser bolts.
The video for The Touch, you have, they're like cartoon laser bolts on.
Yeah, that
cartoon laser bolts flying in from off screen, and when you move the guitar, it deflects them and they bounce off again.
It was pretty awesome.
I didn't really notice that before, but yeah, I remember we did that in front of a green screen.
Green screen.
How often do you go back and watch the videos and other things that you've done?
I don't know. That one looks a little silly now to me, but it's just I don't know. It's kind of cool. One of the things that's really neat now too is YouTube. You know, you can do a video. Video equipment has come down so much in price. You can get a high def camera for like what, a grand now
or less.
And, yeah, people put all their own stuff on. It's kind of cool. But yeah, fun Yeah, light. You said laser bolts. Yeah, that was tough to remember that one.
Yeah, your video is on YouTube. Just look for it, and it's really cool. It's one of those things I fondly remember. I don't remember the first time I watched the video, but that was the first thing that stuck out was the laser bolts, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's cool.
Well, one of the funniest comments that I read from a Transformers fan was they were describing the video. This is before YouTube, and nobody had seen the video in years, and they had a copy, and they were describing it to people, you know, and the laser bolts, and they said, that's right. When all hell breaks loose, Stan rides the eye of the storm.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Well, like I say, you know, it's as corny as that stuff is, I still believe in, you know, in that positive message stuff. You know, it's really cool. One of the best, another quick thing I'll say is when one of the things I got I've gotten several fan letters, obviously, but one in particular was from a kid in the Midwest who, I guess at one point, he had contemplated suicide and all this stuff, and he was saying that those songs, The Touch and Dare, changed his life, and that was like the coolest thing, you know, to hear. I was like, man, you know.
I actually think I talked to that person before. I've heard someone repeat that story, so that is pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what more important or thing I could ever do with my life than, you know, if I can help anybody in any way, especially something like that, you know? It's like, I don't know. It's just, as corny as it is, you know, I like being, you know, trying to bring out some kind of positive message, you know, in the world. It's like, you know, it's a good thing.
Well, absolutely.
You know, corniness is in the eye of the beholder, and there's a lot of things that walk a fine line between being maybe a little corny or being totally awesome, you know, and it's different for every person. You know, there's plenty of stuff that I think is totally awesome that somebody else might consider a little on the corny side and vice versa. So do you really feel at this point that it's a little corny, or is that just to maybe stave off criticism from those that are on the other side of the line? Because I'm on the awesome side.
I think the reason why I might say that is, or possibly, you know, be concerned that somebody perceives it that way, it's just that nobody wants to be thought of as being, you know, preachy or something, you know, because that you get into condescension when you thought, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, Don't Stop Believing. That Journey song. I mean, but it's a great message, you know. But if you look at it as like, well, they're trying to teach or preach to the kids or something, you know. Then, okay, yeah, you could take it that way, or you could just look at it as a positive thing, you know. But there's people that do both.
Some people would look at Journey and say that that's corny, you know, and other people would say, "What are you talking about? That's awesome."
Yeah, awesome. It is awesome. It's you know. It's not really preachy. I think it's just you just try to tell the truth, and that's people know when it's real, you know.
Stan, thank you so much for being with us. It's been a pleasure. It's been a treat, and we all greatly appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, my pleasure. It's really great to hear from you, and appreciate your support. And one more thing, I'll just say is check stanbush.com and see what's coming up.
So Stan Bush was awesome. Thank you very much for speaking with us, Mr. Bush. And check out his new album when it's available on iTunes. I'm certain we will let you know. Rob has joined us from fighting the plumbing issue. Rob, how's it going, sir?
Well, we like to run edited content, so I can't really tell you.
Yeah. This
so
is the PG show. Yeah.
Yeah. It smells wonderful in the house.
Great.
Mm. Yeah, not like bacon.
It was bacon
recycled.
At one point.
A whole lot like Rhinox and farting, though.
So, Rob, tell us who you are.
I'm Rob. How are you guys?
Great. Okay. So, two more
things. That is profound and informative. Thank you.
Twitter Theater this week was kind of a rerun. We did it before. It was Transformers Zone. But before we did the TFCOG dub thereof, so we can just quickly say we kind of like Zone.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's organic brain.
I like it better than Victory or Master Force.
It's really far out. I think that's why I like it.
It's trippy.
I mean, yeah, it's not mind think. I'm so brain dead. It's not very thoughtful or anything. It's pretty much
thoughtful is not a word I would describe Zone with.
pretty much an episode of Power Rangers. Big crazy looking guy show up. Big crazy guy fights it. Wow, did you see that at the end?
Capes. It has capes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And a Z-shaped.
Combiner robots and capes.
Yeah.
And Violin Jaeger or whatever is like the most metal Transformer ever, aside from Bludgeon.
Yeah.
He's like a big.
I always say Violin Jagger.
Mick Jagger, Decepticon Mick Jagger. How do you pronounce that? Does anyone know? Because I even watch it, but I just turned down it because I can't.
Violin Jagger, I don't know. But it's easy to say Diatlas.
Diatlas. Yeah. You know, I was really annoyed for the longest. I thought King Atlas was going to be Diatlas's American version until he got rewritten to be somebody else.
Yeah. The thing is, we were talking about Rebolds before. That's a mold. The Skyquake mold is a toy that I will always buy.
You can't get that toy enough.
Yeah, I mean, Rotorstorm, Skyquake, and those toys, I will buy any version thereof. Can't help myself.
That Armada Overload, you guys talk about him?
Yeah. He's a toy that I have to own every version of. And I also Armada Jetfire. I love that toy so much, yet I have yet to break down to buy the Transformers Collectors Club Astro Train.
Oh, I can't say the same. I got them collecting dust over in the basement.
It's so it costs so much for it's such a great toy, but I just haven't brought myself to it yet.
It had two things going for it. Well, actually, three things going for it now that I think about it. It had the fact that it was that awesome mold. Two, it was Astro Train, and I'm just a sucker for Astro Train toys too. And then I wanted, what was his name, Space Warp or whatever, the universe toy that was going to be made from Energon, Armada. I'm sorry, I've been digging with poop all day. My brain's all crazy. And I really wanted
been digging with poop. My brain's all crazy.
Of all the fart jokes I make, what holds me up from doing a show?
Is literal crap.
Literally.
Rob Springer, ladies and gentlemen.
This is
Johnny Cash wrote a song about. Actually, Kris Kristofferson wrote a song about him. Sunday Morning Coming Down.
I've heard it, but something.
Yeah. So, you wanted that toy?
Yeah, I just had to have it, so I bought it, and I was like, "This is great. This is a pretty box. I'm gonna keep him in his box and open up since I bought him."
That's kind of like me and what was it Sentinel Maximus? You were talking about before.
Oh yeah, Sentinel Maximus is great.
Yeah, but I bought it and never opened it.
I did.
And then you sold it?
Yeah, and then I sold it.
Well, you probably made a fortune, yeah.
Yeah, I made a profit on it.
Turned a profit.
Probably sold it to one of those poor people who never got theirs that they ordered and paid for.
Yeah, I got mine from Big Bad Toy Store.
Did you get candy bars for it? Or
No. Real money.
Oh.
It's not like bartering.
Yeah. No. I have a complex bartering system.
Got a chicken.
I always come out better when I do it on barter than I do for price. Yeah. I always traded a Cybertron Primus where I ended up with two of them when he first came out, and I put them up for sell or trade, and I was like knocking off $5 because I already opened them up and played with them. And this guy was like, "Okay, what do you want? What do you want?" And I ended up with like 1,000 Micromasters, a bunch of Beast Wars. It was like about a good $200 worth of toys. It's like, you are so losing out, dude.
But he really wanted Primus, who we have never seen in robot mode.
Never want.
Visit us
Never.
Online at protecticons.com.
Okay. Oh, we're awesome.
Okay, but yeah, we like Zone. Zone's good. All hell Zone. One more thing we want to mention to the show this week. Go to tfradio.net. That is our website. See, you notice how I have energy now? I've finished off a 2-liter of Pepsi Max. So go to
tfradio.net. Rob Effect.
Yes, Rob. You know, the show just doesn't function without Rob. Rob is the fiber that keeps us going.
You see, and last week we were dragging cuss. We were John and JD-less, so hey.
Yeah. So we were? Were we John and JD-less? I don't even remember.
Yeah, it was last week. Remember, John had something. He had to go drink some martinis. And
Wait. Who are John and JD?
Exactly.
Oh, thanks.
What I'm trying to get is it weird?
Oh, half of the voices you've been listening to.
I'm kidding. You know I love you, John.
I'm just a cog in the team of awesome.
You are the cog in the team of awesome. But go to tfradio.net. We have a little link. It's called a PodTrack survey, and they told me to mention this on the site. So, you know, the podcast is the reason I'm doing it. If you don't mind filling it out, it takes about 2 minutes. Get some information about you. It'll help us out. It'll help improve the show somehow. And, just do it. Go to tfradio.net. Click on the show notes. PodTrack survey. Click it, take it. We would appreciate it. You know, this show is free. It doesn't cost you anything. So if you can spend like 2 minutes, we'd appreciate you doing that. You know, we don't really reintroduce ourselves that often, so I'm really trying to think what we need to hit. I mentioned go to Facebook. We have all sorts of great crap on Facebook. Rob does a great job posting junk.
Check out our blogs.
Check out our blogs, yes. Go to tfradio.net, click on blogs, and we each have blogs, amazingly enough, except for John hardly ever updates his. Turin.
I make it count.
You make it count when you do it.
He's like, hey,
I'm actually
kids,
updating.
I'm
actually, update mine weekly now.
You do. You have a shopping list, shopping guide, or
Shopping guide. I mean, and I didn't really get to attempt that, but basically, unless you live under a rock, you know that stores do new ads on Sundays. So I very bravely get up with a cup of coffee every Sunday morning, pour over the ads, and pull out the particular specials and deals that I think would appeal to our audience, not just Transformer stuff, but geek stuff as well. So,
So that's pretty awesome.
This week, my blog's kind of lame so far. I mean, it's been a real poopy day. But I think
Rob,
last
that's why
week,
we love you.
I think last week I had a pretty – just a post that I think resonates with everybody who's ever – been a longtime member of the Transformers fandom or a longtime Transformers collector. That's the time I lost my mind in Walmart.
Yeah, that was great. You were talking about that. Was that last week or the week before?
I mentioned it and I was like, you know what? I've got to tell this story now because someone's going to ask me like at BotCon or something. So what about the time you lost your mind?
So Rob lost his mind at Walmart when the Touch started playing or the Transformers the movie.
I was so scared. I was like hiding behind DVDs, like, oh god, the lasers are coming.
Let's see. Follow us on Twitter. I mentioned that we are at TF Radio. I am at B Kilby. Guys, what's your Twitter handle?
I'm the JD Church.
Yeah. I am JDUNA, JDUNA.
I'm XV Braun.
That was a good impression.
Yeah, you sound just like him.
Yeah.
All right.
Not nasal enough.
How's this?
And a lot Rob, better. And Rob, what is your handle, Rob?
It's Rob Springer. It's private, so if you add me, send me a message. So I know you're just not in their spam bot. And you can T-former, guys. I'm the Robo Rob that's been floating around talking about bacon and tato skins on the forums.
Oh, yeah, on the forums at tformers.com, which, again, we are the official podcast of tformers.com.
Oh, yeah.
We added a we talked with Jack, and Jack was good enough to add a new forum for snack foods because we love snack foods.
We do eat. That is a fact.
We eat snack foods. Rob is a big aficionado of bacon, and I like really hot crap. Ridiculously, absurdly hot food.
You know, I think Rob has been dealing with some hot crap today, too.
Yes. Oh, no, actually, it's been cold crap. And here's a funny story that my plumber was telling me. The reason he was so late is because he had to deal with someone else's cold crap that got frozen their entire yard, so he had to dig up their entire sewage system. I can't help but go, that is so funny.
That is just hilarious.
Normally you can listen to this show during the dinner hour, but maybe not this week.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, we apologize for this show. And we hope you listen to next week's show, and we will not be Robless, and I'll feel much better. I won't be dragging so much. It's been a down week for me. You know, lots of terrible things have happened.
Kill me some uppers next week.
My wife doesn't love me. My cat wanted to poop in the yard.
I thought wanted to puke in the floor.
Yeah, but check out our other podcast, New Soundwave, as well as Superhero.
I love
Time.
The mood swings.
Yeah, I am bipolar, and we also have RC Throwback. Yeah. So check those out, and remember, check us out at tfradio.net. We have an archive going back to 1999. We are
cool. Of course, about half of that time is empty.
Shut up, XV. We have an archive going back to 1999.
Shut up.
So we're going to end the show, record our next show, which will be up Thursday. We will talk to you guys later. Thanks for listening.
Peace.
Oh.
You've been listening to Radio Free Cybertron, the Transformers Internet radio show online since 1999. Visit us online at www.tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Join in the discussion on our Facebook fan page. Search Facebook for Radio Free Cybertron. Also follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2009, Radio Free Cybertron. Till all are one.
One what?